like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Greg Murray, an animal photographer as well as a rescue and pit bull advocate who's mere days away from publishing his second book, Pitbull Heroes, 49 Underdogs with Resilience and Heart. What might well be described as a coffee table book. It's brimming with Murray's stellar photos of more than four dozen pit bull type dogs, accompanied by text describing the hard luck tales most had to overcome to reach an array of success stories. These include Apollo, an abandoned, about to be euthanized pity, who became a hotshot drug sniffing dog for a police department in the state of Washington, or Charlie, whose saga helped ignite the effort to fight and ultimately repeal the breed specific legislation, BSL, ban on pit bulls in Lakewood, Ohio. Of course, some of those dogs' triumphs aren't quite as impressive, or maybe just more modest, I guess, but the photography is always strong and these visual and verbal portraits are compelling. We'll hear about the book and some of the dogs featured in it, trace a bit of Greg's career as photographer and rescue advocate, and more when I speak with Greg Murray in a few moments here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Later on in the program, I'll speak with Brian Brown, director of the official Animal Rights March happening in downtown St. Pete this Saturday, August 17th, part of a collective of like-minded marches taking place across the world on the same day. We'll cover some fundamental details with Brian, including how, if so inclined, you could participate in the march. Right now, though, let's get to Greg with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. This is Greg Murray on Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Greg.
Hey, how are you, Duncan?
Good. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
For sure. So congratulations on the book, which you heard me just a moment ago describe as a coffee table book. It's classy. There's tons of exquisite photos and more than a few profound success stories. So we'll explore the book and some of those success stories in a few moments. But first, let's trace some of the path that led you to photograph and advocate for pit bull type dogs. For instance, were you a dog guy as a kid growing up?
Yeah, I grew up into a family with a rescue dog. And Muffet was my best friend growing up, and dogs have always, you know, besides when I was in college and whatnot, dogs have always been a part of my life. So absolutely.
So tell me about Muffet, because that sounds like that was a pivotal dog to get it all started.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I was born into my family. They had Muffet already from the Cleveland ATL, which is ironically where my wife and I got our first dog. And I was always by Muffet's side. I have pictures from when I was 1 year old sitting in the kennel with the dog. That's where I like to be, which if you put a picture like that out now, it might not look that good. Hanging out in the clothes hamper with Muffet, just always by Muffet's side. And, you know, besides dogs, I just grew up in a family that always had animals in the house, whether it be lizards, snakes, cats. I mean, they were just always a huge part of my life, and I just always enjoyed their company. They're amazing fun animals to have around.
So would you say that was Muffet the first dog you really fell hard for, or did that come a bit later when you were maybe a bit older?
Yeah, I mean, Muffet was definitely, I grew up, but I don't know, probably the first dog that I actually felt like a deep connection to was, you know, one of my first dogs as an adult, Leo, who I have got with my wife about 7 years ago,
mm-hmm.
an APL. Because obviously I'm an adult now, and I understand more so, I think, all the joys that these dogs bring to your life, whether it be just having an animal around, the comfort, the stress relief. And, you know, as a kid, I wasn't really taking care of this dog. Now, Leo, who we have now, and Kenzie, our other rescue, we are responsible for taking care of them. We are responsible for their lives. And so there's definitely a very deep connection between us.
So as the responsibility is more profound, so is the connection.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Was Leo then when pit bull type dogs first kind of entered the picture, I guess, so to speak, for you?
Yeah, I volunteered at the Cleveland APL prior to us adopting Leo. I took photos there and whatnot. And they had a high population, just like a lot of city shelters, a high population of pit bull type dogs. So I honestly, until probably like 2011 or 12, I didn't know much about these blocky headed dogs. I didn't have an opinion either way. I just always viewed them as dogs. And the more I was around them, the more I heard these oftentimes just terrible, sad stories of abuse, the more I felt I grew connected to them. And I immediately, when I would go volunteer and want to take photos, I'd go to the pitties first. That's who I wanted to help get adopted because I felt that they needed the most help out of all the dogs there. So I was definitely drawn to them around when we got Leo.
And for, I guess, kind of overlapping reasons, I mean, pit bulls are often maligned, and they can be certainly a polarizing topic, as I've learned over the years on this show.
Yep.
It's just kind of a highly charged topic or subject to discuss, and folks often express their criticisms of these dogs, often propelled by myths and misconceptions, and sometimes just sort of unencumbered with actual factual statements. These things just get sort of perpetrated about their jaws and the power of their jaws and that they lock and on and on. But I mean, the point is, whatever people are saying on either side, frankly, they're super adamant when it comes to pits.
Oh, yeah. You have the people that are super adamant on one side and super adamant on the other side, and often I've learned to just kind of ignore the arguments online. I mean, I wish more people just ignored that, but there are terrible things said about these dogs, and when it comes down to it, they're simply just dogs, and all dogs are individuals. Dogs, you know, the way a dog looks does not determine if it will bite. The biting or the aggressiveness happens because of a dog's environment, how they're managed, abuse, neglect. You know, I think there are good people out there that don't mean to put their dog in bad situation. They just lack the education or resources.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think all people are bad owners that lead to things like this. But going back to your point, you know, it's very heated, and it's unfortunate because they're just dogs. And I wish people would just focus on the things that really make cities safer, and that's education, that's strong breed neutral laws, that's enforcing these laws, you know, consistently and fairly. That leads to safety, education, and all that.
Yeah.
And it's just, some of these people are just so stuck up on these animals are devils and here to hurt you, and it's just not true.
Yeah, well, we'll get into some of that legislation for sure later on in the conversation, but it is striking because there's not that many animal-related issues or certainly not that many animals where people are so adamant on pro and con side. And ultimately, which I've also learned the hard way hosting various conversations and interviews over the years on the show, is that I guess because of that very nature, there's really very little movement. I mean, people on the anti side just aren't hearing it from anybody who might have all kinds of facts and information because, again, in this case, as you say, it's emotionally charged and they've just kind of made their decision about pits. And so with that in mind, I mean, even just publishing a book about them, you had to know there might be some backlash or even outright attacks. So did you have that in mind at all as you were approaching this project?
It hasn't happened yet. I know these organizations out there that, you know, they pretend to be nonprofits, but they're professional fear-mongering organizations.
Mm-hmm.
They have people attack you. They have people attack you online, your business. And I know it'll come out. You know, by doing a book like this, sadly, very sadly, you put yourself out there to get criticized. And, you know, I've learned to just, you know, a few years ago when we were fighting the BSL in Lakewood, you know, I got really worked up. I got stressed out. I took a lot of criticism personally. And I've just learned, you know I'm doing the right thing. And you just got to let it go. And you got to, the more time you spend arguing with these people or letting their attacks get to you, the less time I get to spend on doing good things to help these dogs.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'll happen. The book comes out, you know, early September, and it'll get a little crazy online. You know, people will write bad reviews on my business page, all because I'm promoting empathy, respect, education and caring. Kind of crazy, isn't it?
How dare you, Greg? What are you, nuts?
Yeah.
Come on.
How dare I be nice?
That reminds me, yeah, September 3rd, I believe, is the publishing day when the book officially comes out, and we'll get into ways and virtues of pre-ordering also a little bit later in the conversation. But as we're on this particular topic, I'm curious, do you have some appearances scheduled in the wake of the book's publishing date at bookstores or animal?
We have a book release party here in Cleveland,
mm-hmm.
Where I'm based out of. So obviously we want to celebrate the book release here on September 7th in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And then I'll be doing a kind of a little mini book tour. We don't have all the specifics down yet, but I'll be in New York the first weekend of November, New York City. I will be in Chicago towards the end of September, and then I will be New York first weekend of October, L.A. first weekend of November. So I have to be honest, you know, it's been a little bit of a challenge finding bookstores. I think, you know, for my first book, it wasn't very difficult to find places to or bookstores to have me for book signings. This being a sadly divisive topic, while I don't have proof or anything, I think some places are wary of having me because these people that are so hell-bent on fear-mongering and demonizing these dogs will, like, write these bookstores bad reviews and make it so a person promoting a pit bull type book, they'll make it very difficult for them. It is very sad. So
I would like
have to do... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Finish. Sorry.
Yeah, Greg. So I'll probably have to possibly do like book events like at a local bar and just kind of do a meet and greet or something.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because what I was about to say there is that I would like to think that with the focus of your book being really as much the photos, the amazing photos that you've taken, as well as the stories about these dogs that accompany each photo, that it wouldn't be that unpleasant. I mean, as opposed to, say, like when Bronwyn Dickey, who was on the show a couple of times and sort of become an email friend.
Great.
But I mean, you know, people came after her like nobody's business, to the extent where when she was doing a book tour, finally at certain appearances, the one in particular I know of at least, there had to be a police escort for her into the bookstore just because the threats had gotten so nuts and so serious.
Yeah. I just booked a police officer for my book release here in Cleveland. So how sad is that?
Yeah, no,
you
that's...
It boggles my mind. I think everything's going to be fine, yes, but I'd rather be safe than sorry.
Sure. No, I mean, and again, based on other people's experiences, including Bronwyn's, which I hope is on the more severe end of the spectrum, but still, I mean, that did get pretty rough there for a while.
It's sad.
So,
very sad.
So this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is animal photographer Greg Murray, whose new book is Pitbull Heroes, 49 Underdogs with Resilience in Heart. If you'd like to ask Greg a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So what would you say is the premise or guiding principles of the book? I mean, obviously, heroes, that's clearly in the title. But what else kind of went into, when you were setting out to work on the book, what else was sort of the criteria you're using to determine which pit bull type dog was going to be included?
Yeah, I just wanted the dogs with unique stories, dogs that overcame a lot, dogs that had a major impact on their humans' lives, also dogs that had an impact on their communities. You know, like, I know you've looked at the book, there's, for example, the two police dogs, Apollo and Leonard here in northern Ohio, that have become kind of ambassadors, and everybody knows them in their city. So again, unique stories. Some are some are very well known dogs. I don't know how many you follow online or whatnot, but some are very well known. But I also wanted some that weren't well known, so I can share their stories, so they can become more known and people can learn about these dogs. So it was just kind of a huge variety of dogs, and again, people played a role too. I wanted unique people in there as well. There's a Cleveland council person, Matt Zone, who's amazing, and he helped get rid of Cleveland, you know, ban years ago, and he has a rescue pit bull. So a wide variety of people and a wide variety of dogs.
Yeah, I think as I made my way through the book, it felt like pit bull heroes could apply obviously to the dogs in question, but often also to the humans that either went with them or lived with them or helped get them adopted out or whatever the case may be. So, yeah, there's different kinds of heroes on both sides of the...
Correct.
Well, let's talk about some more of those. I mean, you mentioned Apollo and Leonard. I mentioned Apollo sort of in the beginning of the show. Let's talk a little bit about those, because Apollo was, if I recall correctly from the book, sort of abandoned, I think, in such sort of rough position that I think he was like on the verge of being euthanized, and then things turned around for him. Maybe you could talk about how that happened and what the upshot is.
Yeah, someone noticed some, you know, to the average person, Apollo and Leonard have similar stories. They might come across as aggressive or just a little too much to handle. They have high possessiveness drive, which means they like to have toys in their mouth, they like to have balls, they like to grab onto things people are holding, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. But a lot of people that maybe don't understand dog behavior think that's a terrible thing, and they think these dogs aren't adoptable, whether it be because of that behavior or just because maybe people have a prejudice against pit bulls, and, you know, a lot of them get euthanized because they don't get adopted. And, you know, some people saw some good things in Apollo and thought that he'd be a great drug-sniffing dog. And let me say this, you know, pit bull-type dogs, when they become police dogs, they're not the type of dog that's going to be chasing people down. They are typically the drug-sniffing, cash-sniffing type dogs. Obviously, if they're chasing people down, that would not help with their view, you know. By
right,
the
their image, yeah.
It wouldn't be good, but yeah. And so a gentleman, a police officer with the Tukwila Police Department, which is south of Seattle, was looking for a dog and came upon and heard about Apollo. And the city, basically, a long story short, said they'd give Apollo a chance, that Apollo would basically need to pay for himself. Like, he would need to catch drugs and cash to make it worthwhile. And he far exceeded that by hundreds of thousands of dollars. So Apollo pays for himself by finding large amounts of drugs and cash in UPS and FedEx facilities near Seattle that are going back and forth between people, drug dealers, and whatnot. And everybody in the town knows Apollo. Apollo has a I found out about Apollo. He went viral about 2 years ago when the mayor of Tukwila was doing a some type of announcement on Facebook, and Apollo kept interrupting by kissing him and looking and interrupt. So that's how I found out about Apollo, and I reached out to him and said, "Hey, I'd love to have Apollo in the book." And yeah, he's just an amazing dog. It's one of my favorite photos in the book, is Apollo in front of the market.
Yeah, in fact, I was just going to say that. I opened the book as you were talking about Apollo, and yeah, at Pike's Market, or I guess the public market there. Great, great photo and sort of an iconic Seattle background. But I hope, given the arrangement that was initially made for him justifying the expense, I hope he's asked for at least one raise since all this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They've obviously extended his employment, so he's going to be doing that until, you know, he's just no longer physically able to do it.
For sure. Just skipping around a little bit, let's talk about Charlie, just because we've already alluded to, and I think we should either now or later delve more into BSL or term.
BDL, BSL.
Yep. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Charlie and what gave him sort of heroic status.
Yeah, I'll try to make this short and sweet. We could talk probably hours about Charlie, but basically in June 2017, when I was already kind of advocating to end Lakewood's ban, and Lakewood is where I live, Lakewood's 10-year ban, a lady called me who I've never met, was crying. She said her dog got out in Lakewood, got picked up by the city, and she heard that I was the person to call. And she was right. Charlie got out as a puppy. She screwed up. She admits it. You know, you got to control your dogs. And her dog got out. And the animal control said, this is a pit type dog, and it has to leave the city. And I talked to Charlie's owner on the phone that day. This is in June 2017. I said, are you willing to sue the city? Because cases in Ohio have been going in the favor of the dogs. So I knew if we sued the city, it would go in our favor. And, you know, long story short, the community rallied around Charlie. We got signs to put in people's front yards that said, I'm with Charlie. We made local and national news. We just wanted to keep it in the news. We protested. We did public records requests. We found out all these times that the city screwed up and approved pit bull type dogs, that they denied dogs that weren't pit bull type. there are pit bull type dogs all over the city. We were pointing that out. We were filling council meetings on the news just on an almost biweekly basis, doing these protests in front of City Hall. And gosh, 10 months after that phone call, there was a 7-0 vote to repeal the ban that had been acted almost 10 years prior to that week. We also voted. Another thing I want to say, we voted and helped vote out two council people in Lakewood that were pro for the ban. Do I want to say, I don't know for sure if we were like the sole reason. There were some other things going on in our city, but we rallied behind the people running against them, and they took advantage of that, and I'm glad they did. You know, they knew they were going to get a lot of votes from us, the anti-BSL people running for council. But for the first time in 25 years, two council that were incumbents got voted out in Lakewood, Ohio. So that definitely turned the table, and we knew once two out of those three people got in, we'd have that vote. So Charlie basically inspired a whole town. And on top of that, other bans and restrictions, because of our success in Lakewood, have fallen throughout Northeast Ohio. So it was kind of this domino effect.
That's great.
Again, I can talk for hours about Charlie, but that's just the 30,000-foot level story of Charlie.
Well, what I think I'll ask you to do, I'm going to take a call, and then I'm going to ask you to talk a little bit more about what BSL really means and some other offshoots of that. But hi, you're on Talking Animals with Greg Murray.
Hello.
Hello, it's you. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I just wanted to say thank you for what you're doing. I think these dogs don't get enough credit, and people treat them really badly. So for all the bad people that are going to say all the awful things, I just wanted to let you know that I think it's awesome. And keep
thank
up the good
so
work.
Thank you so much.
Well, that's very nice.
I really appreciate that.
So that's...
Y'all have a wonderful day.
You too. Thank you for calling. And so far, that's one vote in favor of pit bull type dogs. So, but yeah, seriously, Greg, if you could talk about what the ban really means in the places that it does exist, and then maybe we'll go from there.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of people think, I'll kind of elaborate, a lot of people think BSL or breed specific legislation or breed discriminatory legislation means that there is a ban. And a ban on pit bull type dogs. And as we all know, pit bull is kind of a lot of people think it's a breed. It's a vague description of a dog that, you know, has characteristics of an American pit bull terrier, or American Staffordshire terrier, bull terrier, and even dogs that aren't part of that breed line that have blocky heads and kind of look like them. A lot of cities have BSL, and it's not a ban. It could be a muzzle requirement. It could be special insurance requirements if you have a pit bull type dog, special leash requirements. So BSL is anything that treats a certain type of dog differently than the other dogs, only based on the way it looks.
Yeah.
And, you know, study after study shows that these things don't work. When you demonize one dog, you need to hold all dogs and all owners accountable in a city. When you put the onus on one type of dog, it doesn't change anything. And people need to be careful around all types of dogs, regardless of the way they look. They need to manage all dogs the same way, carefully and respectfully. So that's kind of just a basic overview of what these laws are. They're getting repealed, I believe, at a much faster rate than they're going into effect. There's a lot of positive momentum going around the country right now.
Yeah,
in our favor, getting rid of these. It's overwhelming and it's really great.
Yeah, it seems really encouraging. It is, as the other part of what you just said in that observation, though, it still seems odd to me that new ones somehow are being passed or implemented, given how fast the ones that have been in place for various lengths of time are being repealed or otherwise voted out.
Yeah, it's not common to see a ban or restrictions go into effect because these laws are becoming less and less popular.
And let me ask... go ahead. No, go ahead, Greg. Sorry.
Oh, no, I was going to say to the people out there that are listening that have, you know, a form of BSL in their city, you know, it can be done. You can get rid of it. You just have to invest the time and energy, which can be a lot. It can be mentally taxing to put so much energy because you have to go to council meetings. You have to talk to your council. You have to talk to your mayor. If you fill those council rooms consistently and just keep talking at public comment, more people in all the meetings we went to, it was 99.9% anti-BSL people. And then occasionally you'd get, you know, someone that's pro-BSL, but they don't want to be seen in public. Because which is to our benefit. They don't get up. They just sit behind computers, most of them, and email the city all these terrible pictures and stories, fear-monger. They don't want to show their face because they know they're wrong and they know they're not popular.
Wow. Okay. I want to come back. I have another thing about this sort of ties to this and ties to Charlie's story a little bit, but let's get another caller involved. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Greg Murray.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a point. As a animal lover and someone who has helped other people with pit bulls, I've never owned one myself, but I have helped other people adopt them and take them. The only problem with pit bulls are human beings. Human beings are the ones that make pit bulls into the monsters they are. They're not monsters.
The monsters that sometimes they can be, I guess, is what you're probably trying to say. Yeah.
Right. Because they look at them as animals that are fighters, attackers, and no matter what level it is, whether they're fighting their dogs or not, people with pit bulls, not all people with pit bulls, but unfortunately too many people with pit bulls look at those animals as something that is exactly what we all fear. Being aggressive, being monstrous, being all that stuff, they're protectors. It's humans that make pit bulls or give pit bulls a bad name. That's really the point I wanted to make.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your call and your input, and I think that's right, and I think Greg sort of touched on that, at least in a, maybe from a different angle, but these dogs, inherently, most people that know them or have them, live with them, find them super sweet, and obviously they can be trained to do all kinds of things. We got into Apollo's story and Leonard's kind of similar story, but on the other hand, like any kind of animal or kid or whatever, if they're mistreated early on or at any point, really, that shapes how they behave and what happens from there. So,
if you look at any bite story online, you know, the news is quick to jump on this stuff. They love to sensationalize these bite stories. They, you know, get them clicks to their website. They get people riled up. But if you look at these stories, imagine if a lot of these news outlets, especially the local news outlets, investigated these stories and did some fact-finding and reported on all dog bites. You could find out in just about every case why the dog was the way it was. It didn't just decide one day, I'm going to bite someone. Something happened in its life, whether they're neglected or treated poorly or used as a guard dog, which, you know, that's a whole other issue, is you have people that live in these terrible areas and they feel the need to have a dog that looks scary. And that's sad. I have compassion for those people that they even live in those environments, that they feel they need to have a shepherd or a big Rottweiler or a big mutt or a big pit bull on their property. You know, so again, it's that uneducated, there's just bad people out there. There's people that lack the resources. But you can always find a reason why a dog bites. It just doesn't one day decide, hey, I'm going to bite someone or hurt them.
Right. And again, it's cast instantly differently if a otherwise sweet lab bites somebody that Thursday afternoon. It's like, okay, well, that's kind of an anomaly. I don't know why he or she did that. Yeah. But
you don't always hear about those stories.
Right.
The news is much more likely to report, and they want it to be a pit. They don't look to confirm it was a pit. Someone just says.
Yeah.
I think the stats out there that only 33% of people can really identify whether a dog is even really a pit bull. There might be some non-pit bulls in my book. There are just some mutts that kind of resemble pit bulls.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really unfortunate, and I don't want to bash the media by any means, but they do need to be more responsible. They need to fact find. They need to either report on all dog bites or just give it up altogether, because they're doing a huge disservice.
I agree. One of the times I did a show that dealt with pit bulls, somebody, they wouldn't identify themselves, but clearly had worked for the major paper in town, said that typically, from their experience, if there was a dog bite, the assumption was that it was a pit, and that's how at least the reporting began, and often never wavered, regardless of what their information surfaced. So there is kind of that tendency. Let me read a text that just came in, and then there might be one more call, and then I want to get back to some of the questions of my own. This text says, thank you so much for what you do. I have owned pit bulls for 23 years now. They are the most lovable and loyal breed of dog I have ever owned. They have a bad rap, and it's ridiculous and unfair. The media hypes it up and keeps it going. Glad to hear some positive press for these precious animals. So that's from Misty in Tampa. So
thank you.
Let's take one more caller at the moment. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Greg Murray.
Hi, Greg. Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi, Greg. I was wondering, do you and your guests support legislation to require insurance for people that have breeds that are considered, vicious? I know it's a bad word, and you guys probably don't agree to stereotype terriers, because, I mean, people looking at Frasier on TV, seeing a Jack Russell, would hardly, you know, consider that dog as being a vicious dog, but they're still classified because they're terriers. But that's my question.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't support I don't support any form of BSL, and requiring insurance for specific types of dogs is a form of BSL. I don't think it's effective. Do I think people should just have insurance in general, like homeowners insurance that covers things like that? Yeah, that's a good idea, renter's insurance or whatnot. But requiring people to do that is a form of breed-specific legislation. And so for that reason, I don't support certain dogs being treated different than others.
Okay. To get back to what I alluded to a moment ago when you were telling the Charlie story, and part of that was that the dog got out and the owner said, I was kind of careless, but that's what happened, and ran into what was then the BSL in that area. So I'm curious, because the story directly kind of overlaps, what you would say the movie A Dog's Way Home, what kind of impact this it may have had in one way or another on BSL and just kind of perceptions of pits and how those kind of laws can work.
Yeah, I actually didn't see that movie.
Ah, okay. All right.
But I know there's a pit mix in it, right?
Well, there's a pit mix in it, and part of what kind of sets the movie in motion overall in terms of this dog going on this long search is that it's already been seen a couple times by the animal control officer, and this is in Denver where there is BSL,
yeah.
And it's strictly based on looks. So the dog got out again, and then the dog was going to be euthanized under the law there because it was, I think, the third time or something. So the dog escaped and went, and that was the bulk of the action of the movie, but it was all kind of hinging on the BSL. So anyway.
BSL for quite a long time.
Yeah.
It's surprising to have a city. Denver and Miami are two very large cities with breed-specific legislation, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah, and the Miami one is actually even bigger. I live kind of not there, but in South Florida, and it's Miami-Dade, so it's like even broader.
The county.
Yeah, so it's like kind of a blight on us, if you ask me. But anyway, this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Greg Murray, whose new book, Pitbull Heroes, 49 Underdogs with Resilience and Heart, is due out September 3rd, but can be pre-ordered now. And if you'd like to join the conversation, we've had some good calls and emails. Get to a couple more if I can, and text. You can call 813-239-9663, email dj at WMNF.org, or text 813-433-0885. So let's quickly talk about one or two more dogs at least, and then let's talk about the publishing date and this other thing the publisher has put into place. But first, I'm just randomly going through some dogs here. So let's talk about Chango, just because he's something of a dandy who wears stylish threads and shades, and you got to love any kind of dog that does that.
Yeah, Chango, if you're not following him on Instagram, you must follow Chango the Handsome Pity. But basically, long story short, he was brought into this family. Someone was going to take him to a shelter, and then the owners of Chango took him in while he was literally on the way to a shelter. And when Evelyn was walking Chango around northern part of Chicago, people would be scared of him just because of the way he looked. He wasn't being aggressive or doing anything bad. And so she just started dressing him up in funny outfits. I'm looking at the book right now. My favorite outfit is the face helmet. He's got a bunny outfit on. He's dressed in one photo as maybe someone from Miami, Florida. There's a really, I don't know what kind of hat that is. But she dresses him up in these most amazing outfits, and it's just hilarious. And he's gotten a lot of press like around the country because of that. And it's just it's unfortunate that she had to do it, but it's just a funny thing, and he's just a total ham and an amazing dog. But yeah, you have to follow him if you're not already. Just hilariousness every day when you look at his Instagram account.
For sure. But I also would hasten to point out there's four different photos of Chango in the book, including in the spaceship thing. And great, great stuff. Now, I just want to be sure to mention before we run out of time, because we are nearing the end of our time, I may not unfortunately get to some of our emails, but just want to note that the publisher of Pitbull Heroes, which is Gibbs Smith Publishing, is donating $1 per pre-order of the book prior to the September 3rd, that's the publishing date, to Pitbull-oriented rescues or other organizations mentioned in the book. So they'll be selected at random, and they'll share the donated money. But where, if someone that's heard of our conversation is intrigued by your book and maybe saw some stuff I posted on social media with a few of the photos, where would they go to pre-order the book, Greg?
Yeah, thanks for asking. You can go to Amazon. It retails for $17.99 or less, but it's always on sale on a lot of those sites.
Yeah.
But Amazon,
can't really,
Target,
can't, yeah, we can't really get into the price. I didn't know you were going to say that.
Oh,
sorry,
but
that's
bad.
Okay. No, no.
Amazon, Target, Barnes & Noble, just anywhere books are sold, they probably have it. And then I sell personalized signed copies on my own website.
But, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So people can do that if they're inclined, and otherwise it does come out on September 3rd, and wherever you get your book, you can get the Pitbull Heroes, 49 Underdogs with Resilience and Heart. So I'm going to try to read quickly at least one or two of our emails. This one says,
sure.
Great show. I never met a pit that was anything but sweet and affectionate. What effects does a human's reaction to the animal have? In other words, when the dog encounters fear when encountering a human. So do you have a quick response maybe to...
I mean, I think that I'm not an expert on dog behavior, but, you know, I think dogs are very smart, as you probably know, and they can sense, you know, I have a lot of dogs that come into my studio that the people thought the dog was going to be fearful of me, and they didn't, because I think they know that I like dogs and I'm a welcoming person. So dogs can sense that when a person is, you know, maybe even nervous around them. And you want to, anytime you meet a dog, you have to always be careful and smart. You don't want to rush into them. You don't want to stick your hand in their face, no matter what the dog, you know. So
yeah.
You just always got to be smart and safe.
And then this last one, probably I think we're just running out of time here quickly, but says, sure. As the former owner of two pits, please don't discount dogs based on looks alone. My beloved Marvin was literally pulled off the street near WMNF. That's the radio station, Greg,
yeah.
Where I'm talking to you from. He was the most gentle animal I've ever been around. But he was kind of scary looking. He passed away a year ago from heart disease brought on from neglect before I found him. But she says, bravo to your guest and me for putting positive pits in the limelight. So that's great.
Thank you.
So I'm going to try to gild the lily here and take one quick question. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Greg Murray, but we only have about 30 seconds. Hi, are you there?
It's me.
Yeah, we just have 30 seconds. Quick question or comment?
An excellent documentary in the Clearwater Library. It's called American Pit Bull, Killer Canine, or Family Friend. I think everybody should see it.
Okay, great.
Great.
Thank you so much for your call. That's perfect.
Thank you.
All right, Greg, we've been speaking with Greg Murray again. He's the photographer and author behind Pitbull Heroes, 49 Underdogs with Resilience and Heart. His website is G Murray, just the letter G, murrayphoto.com, and also on social media, so you can check out his work and some of these dog photos that are found in the book. And again, the book you can get as of September 3rd anywhere you get your books, but you can also pre-order and help some Pitbull-oriented rescues and other organizations by doing so. So, Greg, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Thanks so much for having me, Duncan. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Bye. In a few moments, I'll talk with Brian Brown, director of the official Animal Rights March, taking place this Saturday, August 17th in downtown St. Pete. As our counterpart marches across the world, we'll get details about the history and mission of these marches and some specifics about the local one, which is welcoming additional marchers. Right now, though, it's time to step into the comedy corner. In the wake of my conversation with Greg Murray, I thought it was only fitting that we do something Pitbull-related. So here's a longtime fave, Bill Burr, with a piece called Pitbull in today's comedy corner. On Talking Animals on WMNF.
So I got a dog recently. That's a big thing in my life. I went down to the pound and I got a free dog. That's how I say it. I don't say I rescued a dog. All right, it's obnoxious and it's not true. Sick of people doing that. She's a rescue. Yeah, I rescued her. Really? Did you pull her out of a burning building? Did you jump in a river with your wingtips still on, with no concern for your own safety? Or did you just go down to the pound and get a free dog? Stop acting like you had to take out a couple of guards, crawling on your elbows, using hand signals. Dude, you ever go down to the pound, they're just giving the dogs away. They don't even do a background check. They're just like, you want a man? Get out of here. Who's next? So, my girlfriend actually, to be honest with you, got the dog while I was traveling. I was in a different state. My girlfriend got us a dog, right? Classic female move, you know? That's just a 10 to 15 year commitment. Why would you include me in that decision? So we're Skyping. I go, well, let me see the dog. I thought she got some little cute little chihuahua or something. She pans around and I'm looking at like this hellhound. Yeah, I'm like freaking out. Like, is that a pit bull? Please tell me you didn't get a pit bull. And she's like, it's not a pit bull. It's a, they said it was a mix. Mixed with what? Another pit bull? Look at that thing. That was brutal. Should have seen. It looked like I've been doing pull-ups its entire life. Front paws were still taped up, and shadow boxing. Teardrop tattoo. It's a pit bull. But here's the funny thing. I fell in love with the dog. I know a lot of people don't like pit bulls because they ate a couple of guys. I get it. It's been some issues. But you owe it to yourself at some point in your life to walk down the street with a pit bull. I'm telling you, people just get out of the way. It's awesome. 3-4 blocks away, they see me coming, they just start crossing the street. I love it. My whole life, I've looked like Ron Howard. Okay? I've been mugged repeatedly. But the second they see that four-legged P90X body coming down the street, oh, yeah. It's the greatest dog you could ever have. Having a pit bull, it's like having a gun you can pet. It's tremendous. I'm out of time. You guys are a lot of fun. Thank you very much.
That was Bill Burr with a piece called Pit Bull, taken from one of his TV appearances a few years back. Now let's speak to Brian Brown, director of the official Animal Rights March, set for this Saturday, August 17th, in downtown St. Pete. This is Brian Brown on Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Duncan. Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals this morning. So first, maybe give us a brief overview. What's the history and mission of the march?
So the march was started by Surge out of the UK, which I'm sure most of your listeners are familiar with, Earthling Ed. That's his organization.
Okay.
It started in London, and it just grew from there. In 2018, they had in 25 cities all over the world, about 28,000 attendees. This year, there are over 40 cities that are participating, so we'll find out the actual number of attendees after the march, but all signs point to it being a very global event.
Yeah. Are there any projections based on the 2018 numbers?
Not that I'm aware of.
No? Okay.
Yeah.
So what does a successful march look like? Just talking now maybe more locally for the one that's going to happen in St. Pete, is there a way to sort of quantify the results?
The results, I think, are just going to be based off of strong attendance, the energy of the crowd, maybe some luck-based factors like weather and things like that. But we have, per the Facebook event for the Tampa March, we have a little more than 250 people going, and almost 1,000 people interested in going.
Okay.
So we're looking pretty good.
That's great. So those are about the numbers you were hoping if the turnout reached where you were aiming for.
Yeah, that's the high end.
And you mentioned the weather. Like, what sort of contingencies are there if it happens to be raining that day?
Well, if it is looking like just volcanoes up in the sky, then it might have to do a little bit of maybe rescheduling for later on in the day. But
I see.
If it's just a regular amount of rain, we're just going to slap on some ponchos and umbrellas and
sure.
Go with it.
Yeah, I guess only when you get into the threat of lightning or whatever do you have to really sort of say, all right, we're going to have to hold off, postpone, do something, reschedule.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So if someone's hearing this conversation and maybe perhaps hearing about the March St. Pete version especially for the first time and say, hey, you know, I'd like to march too, how do they go about getting involved?
Well, The march is happening in downtown St. Pete. The assembly point is North Stroud Park, which is the big park in St. Pete with all the banyan trees. We're meeting there at 10:30 a.m. We'd advise everybody to arrive a little bit early to account for traffic and just navigating the one-way streets in downtown and so forth.
Sure.
You can find more information online. The best place to find it is our Facebook event. So if you type in Animal Rights March Tampa, you should see the Facebook event and all the relevant information, the route and so on and so forth is all in there.
And how long is the, speaking of the route, how long is the march likely to take from start to finish?
The route distance is about 5 miles.
Yeah, you're dropping out again, Brian.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, better, thanks.
The route is expected to be about 1.2 miles. We expect the total time to take about 45 minutes to an hour.
Okay, cool. So that's, I mean, it sounds like people can really, let's say you are hearing this and you do want to get involved, so you show up at the park around 10:30. Can you have your own signs or placards, or are there ones that are issued, or are there ones that have to follow a certain kind of format or message, or how does that work?
Oh, yeah. We recommend, if everybody is able to make their own signs, an animal rights or veganism-related message. But if you don't have time, or otherwise unable, we'll have plenty of signs and banners and so forth available for people to hold.
Great. Well, it sounds like you're making it easy to accommodate folks, especially maybe last-minute joiners. So that's very cool.
Definitely.
Okay, so again, for people who want to find out more and how to get involved or what the route is or other information, just, it sounds like the best thing is to go on to Facebook and search for Animal Rights March Tampa and can get all the details that way.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, Brian. Well, thank you so much. Good luck on Saturday. Appreciate you joining
Absolutely.
Us today on Talking
thank
Animals.
You.
You bet. Thank you. Coming up at 11 on WMNF, it's Rob Lori with Radioactivity, extending this three-hour block of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, including in the noon hour, Midpoint with Noah LaLay. Then at 1 p.m., the music kicks back in with the wonderful show Euro Radio, hosted by Paco Morales, flowing right into Scott Elliott and the All Souls edition of It's the Music at 2 p.m. and continuing on into the evening and beyond right here on WMNF. Meanwhile, on today's show is the prize for Name That Animal Tune. We'll be offering a trinket from the vast Talking Animals vault of books and DVDs and t-shirts and who knows what else. So let's move now into Name That Animal Tune, and there will be a prize again that I've mentioned. We'll pick one out for you depending on maybe what you like. The first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song, it's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. But remember, not all tunes are what they seem. Take any guesses that come in after we get off the air. We've just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. I invite you to visit TalkingAnimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. iTunes podcasts are available there too. There are also links to our Facebook page, our Instagram page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and me personally. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram. You can also subscribe to our e-newsletter to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand and other news from the Talking Animals world. That's all found at TalkingAnimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Rob Lori is coming up shortly after the NPR News headlines, and I'll be back next Monday with another edition of Talking Animals on WMNF, Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Thanks so much for listening. Catch you next week.